beloved. We are gathered here today to remember those who've transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must henceforth be forever cast into the abyss of dead names. In this moment of our remembrance, we prove with great grief and wailing the sincerity of our noble tolerance. What we once wrongly allowed in the ignorance of white privilege has become the cleansing rite, a virtue signaling we use to prove our purity. Join with me now as we remember those we've lost. First, the official motto of the Department of Veterans Affairs, for its abject anti-inclusiveness towards veterans who are female, African-American, LGBTQSIA+, or childless. As you perhaps know, the current VA motto quotes from Abraham Lincoln's second inaugural address and pledges the department will, quote, care for him who shall have borne the battle and for his widow and his orphan. Well, surely you see the problems. First, the masculine pronouns must go, as they only reinforce the ugly history of patriarchal discrimination against women and even against men who do not identify as hims. Second, care for the widow? What about the surviving husband of a female soldier or the widower of a gay soldier? Third, I assume you recognize the implicit bias in favor of those who reproduce. Yes, this motto so flagrantly privileges breeders over those who choose not to breed, and also those who find themselves unable to breed. This kind of reproductocentric ableism is very hurtful and excluding to the child-free soldier or soldieress. Besides, you might be wondering, how could this motto marginalize people of color? Well, speaking here only for myself as a person of paleness, I assume it is because of the deeply flawed position former President Lincoln has vis-a-vis our more deeply melanin citizens. As such, everything he said is now forbidden. So let us instead commit to a new motto for the VA, which urges in simplicity to, quote, care for all persons of any gender identity, gender expression, or sexual orientation who shall have borne the battle, and for that being, surviving spouse or spouses, significant other or others, and their offspring, without in any way implying that reproducers are superior to non-reproducers. Do you not see how much more noble this phrasing is? And think of the wonderful blessing of additional employment to typesetters and motto carvers everywhere. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend!
Second, the weather. Or perhaps to put the matter more accurately, casual conversations about the weather. As Washington Post reporter Roxanne Roberts so correctly noted in a recent article, the age-old advice to avoid discussing politics and religion in polite conversation has often led people to treat the weather as a safe alternative, so as to not offend persons of alternate view styles. But alas, weather talk these days has become very contentious precisely because the impending planetary crisis is always part of the subtext of any weather pleasantries. One can no longer merely mention the sunshine or the rain without immediately thinking of how every atmospheric condition is being jeopardized by our collective exhale of that unholiest of vapors, carbon dioxide. But unfortunately, Roberts has forgotten her most basic catechismal precept here. Let not thine mouth openeth without environmental purpose, lest thee omit thine opportunity to chastise the climate heretics in thine midst. Rather than avoiding the weather because of its implications, we must preach the holy gospel of carbon neutrality so that the blasphemers' mouths may be shut up in penitentful silence. Nay, do not avoid weather talk. Embrace it. Use the Bunsen burner of truth the goddess has given us to spread the gospel of climate enlightenment to all heathens and internal combustors. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend!
And finally, we want to take a moment to celebrate the great language liberation work being performed by Madeline Carlisle, a reporter at Time magazine. In her recent article about culture warrior Maya Kobabi's 2019 book, Gender Queer, Carlisle explains that Kobabi uses an entirely novel set of pronouns, e, m, and er, instead of the gender typical she, her, and hers. Such a wonderful convention, and what a beautiful way to bring to light the superior alternative of simply inventing new syllables instead of trying to shoehorn our liberated identities into the patriarchal and cisgender language of oppression. Surely, this is what Blumenthal's fifth epistle to the San Franciscans had in mind when he wrote that overcoming the language of injustice will only happen when we transcend ourselves through the speaking of gobbledygook. Just as St. E.E. Cummings waged war against capitalism by mainstreaming lowercaseism, we too shall finally overcome the pronoun prism we are born into when we simply use words that aren't words at all. After all, what is today's new word other than yesterday's gibberish? When nonsense is our language shall truly be free. Let all embrace these new pronouns, and may E, M, and Air prevail in the holy global pronoun wars of the early 21st century. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend!
And now, with these cleansing rites performed, may we all go forth in loving tolerance and microaggress no more. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend!